Welcome to For the Record, an unfiltered view on current trends and timeless advice for surviving in the aesthetics industry. Whether you're an injector, practice owner, sales rep, or marketer, it's time to set the record straight. Each week, we cut through the chaos and showcase diverse perspectives and winning ideas from the best minds in the industry. I'm your host, Dr. Tiffany Hall, Chief Growth Officer at Aesthetic Record. Now, let's get started on this week's episode. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of For the Record. We are at the tail end of season four, but fear not, we have a lot of value today to deliver. I am here with a dear friend and industry icon, a person who really is one of the foremost voices of digital marketing in our industry, SEO, automation, lead generation, all the things that we all believe so strongly in, both as an AR company, but also me just as a person. But he also has a Crunchbase profile because he's a serial investor. We love Crunchbase here. He's like a legitimate investor who's built companies, exited things on his newest venture, or actually for quite some time now. But Cameron Hemphill is the CEO of Growth 99, a big partner of ours, a believer in our meeting for many, many years and supporter of what we do here. And a great guy to pick his brain and find out all the things you got to know about how to build your business. And he has a combination of different tools that create a really cool tech stack that really help your practice to scale and to build out beautiful sites, great content, SEO, pay-per-click, all the things that you need to crush it in a highly competitive industry. And he's here today to share all of his brilliance. Cameron, welcome to our show.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. That was quite the intro, so I really appreciate it. I haven't been on here for, three or four years now?
Yeah, season one, episode 13.
Okay, there you go.
I did some reconnaissance work in the break. So it's been a while, and man, things have changed, like drastically changed. But I mean, when I said about you have a Crunchbase profile, let's discuss that first. You are a serial entrepreneur who landed in aesthetics, which I think is so many of us are landing here now. And you've done like big business kind of stuff. And you have this lecture called Running Your Practice Like a Business. And I wanted to kind of use that mindset today because we talk a lot about this. Being an actual business owner when you're trying to be a practitioner and run a med spa and be a brand is freaking impossible. And you've got all kinds of things to help us do better at that. So give us just some thoughts at a high level. Like as you look at the industry, what do you notice are the big gaps?
Yeah, so some of the biggest gaps I see is people just not, they don't know where to go, right? There's a lot of tools out there. There's a lot of fragmentation. There's a lot of overlap. A lot of people are very excited to get into this space, right? And I think like you and I have been in this space for a long time. And now everybody, from a technology standpoint, like you just see more and more tools popping up, right? And so you and I have been on this journey for a long time. And we've seen the industry change a lot. Like, I would say 2 years ago, you weren't even hearing the word private equity. You aren't hearing the word semaglutide, weight loss. And so it's changed a lot. And so like what we want to do, is really just make sure that we educate everybody on what's available. We want to be at the forefront. We want to understand exactly like who you are, where you're wanting to go, and then be able to deliver those tools to help them, So, from where I come from, I've been in the tech world since the early 2000s. I'm an early adopter in Salesforce when it comes to investing. I built a platform on top of Salesforce.com, a mini CRM where we focus on different verticals. And so I own an e-commerce company that did very well. I exited that. And so I've been on this journey of like marketing automation, CRM in the very, very early days. And so, I see that as like all the companies that I've built and sold and exited or ones that have not done well. We always had a CRM system. We always had tech. We always had process. We always had automation. We had great marketing. We had great social. And so when I look at this industry needs that more than ever because of rapid growth, a lot of fragmentation, antiquated systems that have been around for a long period of time. And where it's moving is just it's very fast pace. And as private equity comes into this industry more and more, which we're seeing, those people are going to demand platforms to know how to scale. And so that's where we see it going, and that's where we want to help the actual practice owner.
I think you just nailed it right there. If you want to create value in 2024 for PE companies, you better have your CRM, social, EM, all your tech stack locked up and like ready to put it against anybody else's. I mean, it has to be great. It has to work. It has to be efficient. It has to be productive, but it has to be affordable as well, which I think, I both are big believers in that. You can't gouge people. And you've got to have systems that they can run on their own, which is funny because your life cycle at Growth 99, when I first met you, you guys were so hands-on. You were doing everything for the practices. You were a full-time consultant, if you will, really managed services. Now you're much like more like us. You're more of a sort of a SaaS model, letting them do a lot of things on their own. And I think we have to. We've had too many practices who start the industry. They've grown too fast. There's so many great things out there now with ChatGPT and other tools to help give you kind of a direction of what you need to then go into a great system and actually build it out yourself. Even seeing you guys change, I feel better about the fact that we are not managed services. I mean, yeah. I can't possibly put in someone's inventory there. We can't do that. It's just not possible. There's too many of you and too few of us.
That's right.
Can't make
yeah.
that work.
It's not scalable, yeah. right? So we quickly found out, hey, in order to do this, like we're almost going after what the market was asking for. And in initial days, it was managed services. And so we're like, okay, we're going to help out anywhere we can. We'll find our niche along the way. And so what we found is like in order for us to scale effectively and to help the practice, we have to build a system and a platform that gives them the ability. It's a self-service platform. They can log in, they can manage what they need to manage and learn how to do it. We're not going to send out your emails. We're not going to send out your texts. There's very simple systems, ChatGPT and other creative systems that you can use, even inside of our app that you can build and send the content out.
Yeah, use what you have at your fingertips. But I think it brings up a different issue of now if you do a SaaS model, you have to use it. So we have so many clients who they buy AR and they use like one thing or two things, three things, and they'll go complain somewhere like, hey, you don't have these features. Like, we have all those. We have everything that you're asking for. One day I got attacked at a trade show. Like, you need to have a gallery of photos. Like, we have that. Mm-hmm. They had never actually just click around. Just go in your system, open up and start clicking buttons and see what you can find. Sometimes just looking around, you'll find things that you don't know are there. But I think the other part of that too is they just don't use all the features. And so now that it's a SaaS model, we have to expect them to do it for themselves.
Yes.
It creates more chaos. So how do you guys combat that to help your users understand all the things that you guys have? Because you have so much stuff in your system and help them to learn and actually monetize it and make it work.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a shift. I mean, one thing that you have to do is if you're going to move to self-service and really give value and empower the practice owner and the providers and whoever's working there, you have to build a really great community of a help center, right? So we use a lot of tech. We are a very process-oriented company, and that's the only way that we're able to scale at size, right? So we have like 165 onboardings right now, and it's all because of scale in process and tech. And so the way that we've been able to accomplish that is rolling out a really good FAQ base, help center, webinar, the ability for people to come in and learn, right? And then we record everything. And so there's videos, there's a knowledge base, and we constantly encourage people to go there and understand how to use the system. And then anytime they have a question, they can email for a ticket, they can chat, they can make a phone call and book with our customer experience team. And so that's the way that we found it to be successful and how we can empower the users so they can run their practice the way that they want to run it.
And I ask that because it comes up a lot that you or whoever is no longer doing all the work for them. And we hear that all the time. Well, they don't do it anymore. And I want to tell people, especially if you're listening to this, that when you learn to do it on your own, you can triple, quadruple, 5x your ability to make change. Because if I have Cameron's stack and I have my ability to like do the things I'm doing right now in real time about my practice, gosh, what a powerful combination. But you got to use what you buy. Whatever it is that you're buying, you got to use it. So I want to go into that being said, websites. Yeah. This, we just did he and I filmed a webinar just right before this podcast, and websites are my hot button. As I look at practices who join AR and we try to get their Stripe URL for like Stripe's thing, they don't have a website. There's no website. So Stripe is like going to go to Instagram? I don't think so. I'm like, you got to build something. You got to have anything. But to me, that's the most important place you spend time and money is your website. So help us understand what we should be doing with websites and where the gaps are and what we should not be doing and avoid entirely.
Yeah, great question. So we were talking about this on the webinar that we just recorded, right? And so I look at a website. Well, first of all, I think websites are just people just look at them as a checkbox. Okay, I got a website up and running. And to your point on Stripe, if they don't have a website, I think Stripe requires you to have a website.
And they put up some ridiculousness that you don't even want to know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been through their ringer because we use Stripe as a payment gateway, and that's a great, great tool. But, they have specific requirements. So, yeah, coming back to the website, the importance of it, right? I was talking to you about this a little earlier offline, but websites I look at as your second practice by default, right? It's your digital practice. So I see a lot of people spend a tremendous amount of time on decking out their brick and mortar, right? All the fancy fixtures, the equipment, the front, you know, the look of it, which is important. I'm a big fan of that too. But at the same time, like your website is going to get more views, more visits than your brick and mortar every single time. And it's something that you can push out to your local community. And if you look at it through the lens of, hey, no, this is as important as my brick and mortar. This is my second digital practice that generates more traffic than my on-site practice. Really, it's going to change your thought process. you know, make it very, very powerful to collect data, right? It's important to have aesthetically pleasing website. Totally get it. We're in aesthetics. I don't want people making pieces of art, though. I want them to create a site that captures data, whether that's through online booking, chatbot data collection, forms to collect data, self-assessments, virtual consults, whatever it is. If someone conducts a search query online and they find your website, the last thing you want them to do is leave, right? You spend all that time and effort to get them to the website. Don't let them leave. Don't put up the blockers. Let them book, collect the data. And if they don't book now, maybe they book later.
Let them book. It's like let them eat cake. I find, just in the past 4 or 5 days, I was looking for a practice and there was no place to act. I couldn't book a visit. I couldn't do a contact form. I could do nothing. It was like a beautiful site, but I could do nothing. And so I'm thinking to myself, boy, they must be so busy. They don't want anybody new. They want no new patients, no new leads, no nothing, because there's no place for me to put my details in. And I can't imagine being so busy and feeling so confident that I've collected no data. By the way, I think you should get people in your funnel all the time because you never know what's going to happen. But the website doesn't do you any good unless you can actually use it to pull people in. I feel like people forget that part, especially online booking. Contact forms, unless you're going to call them back in that moment and say, hey, we have a booking for you, book right now, there's no point, because I'm going to go somewhere else and online book with somebody else. Like, I'm a millennial. I'm right now, instant gratification. I will not wait for you till the next business day to call me back. It's not going to happen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so I 100% agree. We live in a world right now that is instant gratification. If they can't get the information they want, they move on. I was telling you the story, you know, a minute ago of, like, I've been flying a lot lately over this past weekend, right? When I book my flights, think about it. It's very simple. You go online and you book your flights. You don't call Delta. You know, you don't call United. You go online and book, right? Because calling sounds like a nightmare. We don't want to do that. It's the same thought process. So I think if the practice owner really starts to look through the lens of the consumer, they will understand that they are putting up roadblocks, right? Whether that's a website, it's a call to action, it's the Instagram, whatever it is, like, the last thing you want to do is spend all the effort to get them to your store and then have them leave.
Yeah. Well, and I think it brings up a part. I mentioned I sent you a little document last night around kind of the brand book. And I use that term very loosely. I think about brand book as, who am I as a practice? Am I going to be high volume, low margin, low volume, high margin? What's my voice, my color theme, my, you know, my sexy, my whimsical? Like, who am I? Because first of all, I have to know that. How do I even figure that out? Because I feel like the website has to be derived from that. How I communicate in text and email comes from that. How I do social media comes from that. And do you guys help me with that? Or where should I go to find out how to decide who I want to be when I grow up?
Yeah, so from a branding standpoint, like who you're going to be. So we don't do any branding, right? This is something that I would suggest hiring an industry expert or a great resource. I love 99 Designs. Mm-hmm. I think that they do a great job. But make sure you understand who you are. And so once you identify that brand book, if you will, your identity, your mission, your values, make sure that's on cross-platform, right? And what I mean by that is, if your practice doesn't match the website, there's a disconnect there, right? The last thing you want to do, or your social, you have this wonderful social media on Instagram or TikTok, or whatever. You have this amazing website and they come in and it doesn't look like your practice, right? They're like, well, this isn't what I saw online. There's a disconnect. There's a little bit of, issues there when it comes to trust, right? And so my suggestion would be, whatever that brand is, whatever your mission is, the values are, and that should come from your heart. That should come from, like, why you came into this space. If you're here to build confidence in someone, or if you're here to, you know, really, like, impact someone's life, because when I look at aesthetics and wellness, I look at it in the sense of, like, the end result is what they're buying. They're buying confidence and they want to feel good. So if you can, like, do both of those things, that's like, you know, if I was a practice owner, a lot of times I ask this question, that would be my mission, right? We want to build confidence, make them feel better, and make it easy. And so if you aren't showing that, and let's say on your social, it looks like that, your Instagram looks like that, and then the on-site location doesn't look like that, that's a problem. And so just make sure that the brand identity is cross-platform.
I think also how you communicate, even on your site, if you want to be high volume, low margin, you're much more of a lead gen, you have to be a lead gen machine, right? You need to get people in the funnel all the time. If you're going to be super concierge and boutique, perhaps it sounds different, it looks different, maybe even you advertise differently. Word of mouth is probably a big part of your practice, but I think if you're going to be that high volume practice that needs to get lots of bodies in, you got to know who you are, and you got to focus your entire lead gen efforts, marketing efforts, all that on just getting people in. And hopefully retaining, nurturing, all the things you got to do, but also just getting them in the front door all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, that comes to AdWords and pay-per-click and SEO and all the things that we talk about that are mystery, the mystery words, alphabet soup.
Yeah.
And even here, we, you know, Google launched a new process recently. They went from this universal tag to, I don't know if you guys know, but this whole GA4 thing. Google's changing all the time. The algorithm changes all the time. It does for Meta as well. A lot is changing every day. You mentioned that. How do you keep up with that? Because me as a consumer, as a patient, I want to know when I click on it and say near me, I find it. But as a practice, it takes a lot of work to get that thing to show up when I click Botox near me. It takes a lot of work. It's not as easy as it looks.
Yeah. No, great question. I mean, and good point. It's not easy, right? There is a lot of moving parts when it comes to the Google platform. They control it, right? Digital marketing companies don't control it. Yeah. Google doesn't do a wonderful job of announcing things either. If like you ever logged into your Gmail or your Google account, you're like, oh, that's a new feature. Or all of a sudden they have a new UI and you're like, dang it. Like where? So they changed their chat feature recently. We use G Suite inside my company, and they changed their chat feature. And now I no longer use the chat because I don't like how it works. So anyway, back to your point. Yes, they control the beast, right? They control the search query. So they could say all of a sudden that we don't want to market these keywords, like they'll just like they won't show up. They could come up with this, right? When they're changing the algorithm, when they're updating to like GA4, like you mentioned, it's important to just work with a individual or company that is in the industry that understands SEO, has a direct connection with Google, has some support over there, so they can understand and then distribute that out to the network so they can educate people and make sure they're forefront of tech.
Well, we talk about this EAT score a lot, this expertise, authority, trust score, which is also how Google kind of decides if you're worthy or not of being on the rank. Yeah. And it's things like now, I think more than ever, people who go to ChatGPT and put in like some generic prompt, get some generic content, they put it on their site. And sure, Google has now said you can use chat, you can use AI content, but it has to be good. It still has to be like good content. You can't just put crap on there. But I think we're seeing it more than ever now that it's just a lot of the same generic content that you can tell chat wrote with some weird keywords that it's putting in there over and over and over again, over-indexing them. That will crush your business too. So how do you guys recommend using like an AI kind of platform? I know you guys have it in your system as well, to satisfy Google's requirements, but also to make it meaningful content.
That's a challenge, right? I think a lot of people have heard this ChatGPT word. You know, it's been a kind of a hot word, right? Oh, yeah. And same with AI. Which I think that there's a time and a place for AI and ChatGPT, especially when you're creating content, like for email campaigns, text campaigns, big fan of that. You could use it as a resource for like content for services and treatments, or even content for maybe a talk that you're doing or an event that you're doing or something of that nature, but use it as a baseline. If you're just grabbing that, copying and pasting and putting that on your site, huge no-no, right? A lot of people have done that. Google looks at it as like duplicate content, and it will just flag your site, derank you. A lot of times too, I think people have this idea that if you, the more content you have on your site or the more blogs, the better your ranking is going to be, right? And so a lot of times, like this is one of the things that we do at Growth 99 is we look at what is called this a dead weight audit, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have tons of content and it's just like blogs and like lots of duplicated content, maybe you have Botox in your keywords and your service pages and treatment pages, and then if you have a ton of blogs on it, that can actually pull your ranking down. So you want to just be mindful of that. I think a lot of people think that the more blogs, the more content, the better the results I'm going to get, and that's not true.
Yeah, and years, I don't know how many years ago it was, maybe 5, 6, 7, it could have been 10, I don't know, but we were all big keyword stuffers, right? The big thing was stuff keywords everywhere, keyword, keyword, keyword. And then Google decided that, wait a minute, no one wants to read that. I mean, it's terrible. The jargon that you're reading was just like keyword stuffing paragraphs. Yeah. And again, it needs to be able to communicate expertise, authority, and trust. And so a patient's like, what the hell am I reading? I have no clue what this even says. And it, you got dinged for it. And so now I think a lot of people have yet to figure out that's no longer the thing. And they're still keyword stuffing, and they're still just putting in long form content that's not beneficial. You mentioned before in an earlier webinar, we were talking about like the tips and tricks on like ads, top 10, top 5, top 3. People want to know what your ranking list is, like what you think is important. I think those are the kind of blogs I want to read as a patient. I see those go viral on like LinkedIn and places like that, but mm-hmm. just like basic, just full on long, you know, word vomit, no one wants that. It does not help you, I don't think.
Yeah. No one's going to read it, right? And so Google wants to serve up like the authority that's going to give value to the user, right? So that they want to make sure that they are giving the best content out there. And so if you just have this dead weight, lots of keyword stuffing, I agree with them. Like, you know, I think that it should just be authentic, good content that empowers the user. And so, you know, they've done a really good job at that. And I think like when people, there's a difference between, have you heard of Red Hat or Black Hat SEO?
No, enlighten me.
Well, I have a podcast on it, actually, on our podcast that I go into it, and I speak like half hour on it. But basically, it just kind of says that the difference between good SEO and bad SEO, right? And so keyword stuffing, which it did work over time, it could get you ranked. But what's going to happen is it will rank you quickly for a short period of time, and then Google will pick it up, index it, and de-rank you. So you may see this spike, right? And you're like, oh my gosh, it's working. Look at the spike in another 30 days. You're going to be like de-ranking, right? And so I just go on there and I talk about really the differences between like red hat, black hat, what's good, what's not good. And really, if you make it simple, like have good and rich content that empowers the user. And if you're trying to like rank for Botox in Dallas, for example, right? Have really good ranking authority content that talks about that on your services and treatments, and maybe post a blog. But if you have the word Botox over and over and over and over and over again in Dallas and Dallas and Dallas and Dallas and Dallas, we don't read that way, right? To your point. And if that's what your content reads, Google will pick it up and really like bring your ranking down.
Well, I think YouTube has a similar thing. If you're on YouTube now, if you name your videos all sort of a similar theme, it helps. They tell us that if you have a big YouTube channel, you need to have your videos almost be like obviously in a playlist, but also have the content be sort of corresponding in that playlist, where maybe it is bestest in Dallas, best that in Dallas, because you want to sort of pick up on this theme that you're the best in Dallas. But I think we mentioned here YouTube, we mentioned pay-per-click, we've mentioned, you know, even like your Google My Business, now Google Business Profile is there, you've got ads, you have a lot of things you could do. And if you're a practice owner who's looking at this thinking, gosh, I tuned into this podcast wanting to feel good about myself, and now I feel like I'm a loser, I'm not doing anything right, is how I feel most days. Where do they start, Cameron? If you looked at the most impactful thing you could do, right? If you hung up the phone or the podcast right now and walked out of here, what are the things I should do to be, quote-unquote, omnichannel enough, but I don't have enough of me to be truly omnichannel?
Oh, my gosh. Big question, right?
Yeah, no pressure there, buddy.
I think marketing is the most important part of business. If we're not marketing, we're out of business, right? And you could look at sales is the most important part of business because revenue drives everything, but marketing starts before sales, okay? And so that's why it's so important. So you have all of these networks, right? You have Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Snapchat, the website, the SEO, Google campaigns, Google My Business Profile, reviews. I could go on and on, podcasts, YouTube. Like, how do I do all this?
You don't, right?
Yeah, you don't unless you don't want to sleep, you know? And I think, like, if you're an entrepreneur, we get in this thought process of, I'm going to conquer the world, right? And what happens, this has happened to me, you know, where, like, hey, you get up early, you find yourself getting up earlier, work out, physically fit, you have a good mindset, you're ready to roll. But you can't do everything and do it well, you know? And so if I was, I would hire someone. I would hire an industry expert that can help me. And maybe that's with the website. Maybe it's running ads. Maybe it's getting my Google profile set up correctly. Maybe it's helping me, you know, create a podcast or a YouTube channel. I would look for help. And I think, like, when people hear that, they're like, okay, that's expensive. But there is very cost-effective ways that you can actually do this. You could learn it yourself, right, if you really want mm-hmm. to. Like, I think when it comes to organic social, for example, I think the person that's going to do that the best is either like the practice owner at some point, to where they can bring someone in-house that understands the brand, understands the voice, and then can just capture content so it can be pushed out. But where do they start? Man, I mean, you know, the biggest thing is to be on platforms where your audience hangs out. You have to be. If you say, like, I hear it all the time, I'm not a social media person. I don't like Instagram. I hear it all the time.
Tough luck.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and I see other people that just nail it. Like, they do just a great job. It comes to them easy. And I get some people are more extrovert than, you know, introvert. I get that. But just go for it, you know. I would encourage you to go for it. No one cares what, you know, stop caring what people think. I think that's a big thing. Oh, I don't want people, maybe I say something stupid. You know, it doesn't matter, right? You can always delete it if you want to. But just, I would say take action, you know, is the biggest thing. If budget's a concern, you know, there's courses you can go through. You can watch YouTube channel, like maybe take the time on the weekend, but it's very, very important that you are marketing on all these channels. And if you get to a point, like when I see practices that are starting out, more budget conscious, right? For those, like, use the free tools. YouTube's free. Mm-hmm. Instagram's free. All these are free, and a lot of people drive a ton of results from these channels, right, from posting content. Creating a podcast is free, right? You just got to put in the time and effort. Once you start to grow, you know, start to pass these things off. Hire an industry expert, hire someone in-house. Once you get to the mature phase where everything's kind of automated, right? That's where I see practices really start to thrive. They figured it out. At that point, like, look at data. It's all about data and turning dials and mathematics. Mm-hmm. You know, when you get your point to where it's round on mathematics, how many leads come in, what's the conversion rate, what's the CPL, what's the what are the KPIs that drive all that stuff? That's what becomes attractive for private equity. Private equity doesn't want to buy you. They want to buy the business and brand so they can scale it.
The machine. I think what you mentioned, if you're going to spend money anywhere, for me, it's website. You mentioned that already in the beginning. Like, websites are the thing that I think is non-negotiable, because it's how you get found out, if you will. And I agree with you. Instagram, you can do it on your own. YouTube, podcast. It's certainly hard on your own. But if I were a practice looking at this, I would invest in a marketing person just to help. And what you said about being in the practice, I think, is so critical. Even if you have an amazing agency who is doing, like, managed services work, they're making videos for you and content, and let's say you're in that room on that day when something really cool happens to capture that content, it gets missed. Like, you cannot overly curate things, because social media is so in the moment and real, and you want to know what's happening today and being at an event. And, you know, here we have all these little gimbals walking around doing videos and things. I did not do that before, I'll be honest. Everything we did before was very curated, because I'm a very curated person. I like it to look professional and be polished. And we have a new person who's like, no, you just got to have stuff out there. Like, just go do it. And yep. I think it's so true. But to have a person doing that for you far away is very challenging. Even the captions and your voice and finding out what your voice is. I just think if you have a really awesome website, then you can spend time on Instagram yourself and on some of these, like, things that you can do for free. You can drive a good business to at least acquire enough funds to then go do, like, sophisticated things like what you're offering.
I agree. I mean, the website is an area that I would definitely go all in on and nail it and make sure it's built correctly. Right platform, right call to action, good content. Everything else, yeah, you could learn yourself till you get to the point to where you can, you know, outsource or hire internally. I think the practices that I've worked with that have done social media the best, the practice owner starts themselves, and then eventually they hire a full-time videographer that just comes in, films all day, capture stuff all day, schedules out the content, emails it out, text messages it out, so because they're in it every day. They're part of the brand.
Well, that brings me to the next question, which is like the age-old issue of, let's say it's you doing it, or they're learning on their own, and they're driving a ton of leads to their platforms, a ton of leads, you know, clicking through, and they say, but Cameron, I have no new patients. I've driven all these new leads, and I'm seeing all the traffic on Google, I'm seeing all the traffic on my site, but we are not increasing revenue at all. Nothing is happening. It's your fault. It's always gonna be our fault, by the way. We know that. But it's your fault. How do you help a practice understand, first of all, what they're driving in and the value of that traffic, and then what they're not doing to actually move that visitor into a converted lead?
Yeah, that's a great question, big question. And so, like, it's important to look at performance, for sure, and understand where the gaps are internally and externally. What I mean by that is, like, is there gaps in the practice, or is there gaps from the marketing company that you've hired, right? So what you're gonna wanna do is, let's say you have the agency doing SEO, like, that's a long-term game, very long-term game. If you think you're gonna do SEO for a month and you're gonna get these amazing results, or 2 months or even 3 months, it's not gonna happen. This is a long-term game. It takes tremendous amount of effort. Lots of tools required, lots of data to analyze. And that's one thing. If you're running like Facebook ads or Instagram ads, that's a quicker way to get bookings, quicker way to get leads. And same with Google pay-per-click campaigns. Quick way to get to the top of Google search, right? I'm a big fan of all of them, because when I've seen, like, the most successful practices that I've worked with, do them all. And even Google My Business ads, the Near Me campaigns, those are huge too. But what you're gonna wanna do is, you're spending all this money and all this effort, and you're meeting with the marketing company to hold them accountable, if you will. If you don't have that data going into a lead management system or a CRM, that's a problem, right? I see it all the time where, like, they'll drive traffic and they don't have it going anywhere. Like, if it fills out a form or a booking system, it's got to go into some sort of a system that has automation. And so you could say, okay, cool, this search query created this lead, and this lead came from here, and we spent X amount of dollars, and it yielded this in return. I can comprehend that now, right? So now I can hold myself accountable. I have a great practice that I've been working with for a long period of time, and I was looking at their data recently, generating a ton of leads for them, a ton of leads. And I log in and I look at their system. And I'm like, why are all these, why do all these say new lead? Like, these leads aren't all new. Like, that we have statuses where you can change like the status of where they're at in the process. And I'm like, who's calling these leads? And they weren't calling them. They're like, well, I thought that, you know, the text messages and emails would work. I'm like, yeah, those are great to help like build up, you know, but you need to make these phone calls. And I think that there's a stigma that's like, well, I'm not a salesperson, I'm a doctor, right? Or like, I don't, just this weird thought process of like them feeling like maybe they shouldn't make the phone call in some mm-hmm. cases. I said, you know what, hire somebody or have someone on your staff start calling them, and then let's chat in 30 days. The results were astonishing. Like, they're closing leads, they're closing new bookings, and then they're rebooking them, they're putting on membership, upsell, referral. Like, the customer lifetime value is enormous from just booking one new patient, right? So I think that there's that thought process of like, maybe we put ourselves in a category that we're almost above a salesperson, which sales is just super powerful. This is a sales business.
Our life is, living 100%. Is a sales business. I feel 100%. Like.
Everything is sales. Even if you're, you know, negotiating with your spouse or significant other, like, where are we going to eat tonight? That's a
we're
sales
selling.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. ABC ISB Closing. I just did a lecture for one of our customers about selling. That it's, you know, the lecture's called To Sell Is Human, because we all do it every single day. And to me, I feel like, to the point of not selling, I will get on the soapbox for 1 minute, is if I think I'm the expert and the smartest person to do a thing or the best person to do a thing, then it's my duty to share that with somebody else. It's my duty to say, Cameron, you have an issue, and I know I can solve it best for you. If I don't tell you that, I'm doing a disservice to you.
Yes.
If I trust you in the hands of a lesser skilled person or person who doesn't have what you need as far as the devices, then shame on me for not doing it. To sell is to share what you are best at and the reason why your version of that thing is the best thing. It's like when you're a podium speaker. You're on podium all the time, too. When I'm on a podium, it's like, I think I have good things to say.
Yeah.
I'm up there because I want you to hear what I have to say, because I've lived it, I've had the battle scars, whatever the reasons are. There's a reason why I chose to go on that stage and say that message on that day. And if I don't share that, shame on me, because now someone else could have avoided the same pain that I had to go through, or the same issue I had to go through, or they didn't learn the cool new skill that I just found out. I just think it's your duty. I feel like sales is more of an ethical obligation in medical.
Yeah.
Because if you had cancer, I should be able to say, hey, you have cancer. Like, I should be able to diagnose you. Not be like, oh, gosh, if I tell him he has cancer, then I'm selling. No, he's going to die if you don't share. Like, you got to go share.
Yeah.
It's more of sharing. I think sharing is caring, not to be, you know, a weirdo. But you got to share things, and that is selling. It's persuasive selling.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think, like, to your point, it's your obligation, right? It's they're looking for help, and they're going to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. So it might as well be you, especially if you have the confidence and you're the qualified person to do it. Why not do that, right? And so I'm a big fan of that. I think it is the obligation. I think you are doing it a service if you're not doing it. And really, if you look at it through the lens of like, hey, I'm helping this person, then it's a different. This isn't Cheeseball Charlie selling. You know what I'm saying?
We're not ShamWow over here.
Yeah, this isn't the used, you know, car lot type of thing, right? Where they show up and you just, you know, they puke all over you in some cases. This is giving them information. The consumer nowadays wants to be sold through impactful information that's going to enhance their life. And if that's the approach, then they have the confidence that they're going to come in and book with you and then be a client for life.
And I think it's part of your brand book as well as your selling mantra. Like, here we're very assumptive in many ways, that if it's a good idea and it's what you want, and it's a price you can afford, of course you're going to buy it. Like, duh, why wouldn't you? But also negative selling of, you said this thing is your biggest pain point. I have a solution. If you don't move forward, it's only going to get worse. It's almost like the chemo back to the cancer thing. If you don't do chemo, we know for sure you're going to die. Like, negative selling also works. And I think for a med spa industry, if you're the expert who sees adverse events, that's very natural for you to say, I see all the things that happen when they don't go well. I know I'm the best at this. Let me, you know, I want to take care of you, make sure that you're in good, capable hands. But I think you have to decide what you want to be as far as selling. And then your messages all are like that. Are you a helpful guide? Are you an educator? Are you a mentor? Because if that's who you are, and then you have like a ShamWow email that goes out, or a ShamWow SMS, they're like, well, what the hell happened to Cameron? Now he's like a used car salesman. It has to, again, that's when you start using different people to do different things. You got to have the same consistent theme of, we have what you need, and we're here to help you figure out how to, you know, put it in your lifestyle. Let us know. We're here, you know, whatever it is for you, but you can't be ShamWow one note and then be really helpful, a mentor and educator in the other.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. Absolutely agree. This is great. This is, what else do we have on the?
I have so many things. Okay, one thing I want to mention, mentioning leads coming in, is automation. You kind of touched on it before. Is if I bring all these leads to the practice, let's say I'm using your CRM, I'm using all the tools that you have, and I have leads is overflowing everywhere. how do I make sure that someone is actually touching them and talking to them and making sure that they do get booked and that they're in a nurture campaign long term? Like, how do we use this idea of automation and triggers and things to choose to not have to have so much headcount but still be really productive with our time?
Yeah, great question. And like, one of the areas that I see that is most important, and I think the word automation is like maybe scary, right? It's like, oh, automation, what's that? That sounds like a lot of technology that I don't know how to use. And so like, when to kind of break that down, you know, automating your business is extremely important for scalability and to eliminate human error, right? And so if you find anything that is a human touch or human error that can be automated with tools or tech, I'm a big fan of that. Anytime you can automate something with tools and tech and not put the negative experience in the consumer, you're going to scale, you're going to increase your time per day. And when you do that, you're able to focus on areas of opportunity that you weren't able to focus on before, right? So for example, let's say you don't have online booking and your phone just rings all the time, right? How many hours would that take if the phone just constantly rings, right? And we want the phone to ring. We get that. But if you had online booking or the ability to drop a text to the link online booking or an email or something in that regard, and people just book online, the amount of time you're going to save and the experience of the consumer is just dramatic. So when we're talking about automation, I love people to invest in tech in this industry. It's becoming more and more critical, right? And I think in other industries, like, we use a lot of tech, for example. We have a CRM. We have so much automation. Email, like, same with you guys, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's the only way we can run it. You know, and so when these leads come in or patients come in, like, make sure that there's a system that can drop them a text, an email. You can change the content, you know, but you have to be automated. Push the patient data from a CRM to an EMR to like a rewards program, right? Like, have a good tech stack. And so if you haven't analyzed your tech stack in a while, it might be a good idea to analyze it. And I'm not saying like jump ship and go look at other products and services. To your point earlier, I think a lot of times we have great software, we have great tools, and we don't understand its full capability. So start communicating with your current vendors and see what's available. And if there's something that you can use on the tool belt that they have that you can automate, seriously invest in that.
And if it's not there, ask. I mean, I get cool ideas from customers every day, and we build stuff off of request because they're using a Growth 99 saying, hey, I can do this thing in his system. How come I can't do it in your system? And so we build things to suit all the time because it's good for the goose, good for the gander. But I think what you mentioned about automating things being so critical, and the tech stack in general all working together. I think if you have really great systems that don't talk to each other, you're not really any better off than if you had maybe less awesome systems that work together, you can get a whole lot more done. And I feel like we have that issue here. It's like the shiny thing syndrome of, I want this one feature and I'm going to sacrifice all the things that could help my practice be more productive, more efficient, because I wanted this one thing that obscure off the wall thing, and I'll sacrifice everything else to get it. And then all of a sudden you disconnected that ecosystem and you're in a world of hurt, and it's hard to go back in many cases.
Yeah, we call that the shiny object at Growth 99, where one customer may want one thing, but it's not best fit for all the users, right? So it's important to kind of have like a voting or ranking mechanism.
Yeah, for sure.
So you can look at that, and people internally can rank it, you know, people externally can rank it. But yeah, to your point, I mean, you know, the best way that we learn is talking to the market and then analyzing that and pushing out new features.
Yeah, and you guys have iterated super fast. I mean, we have to as well here just to stay afloat. But as you think about, you know, the crystal ball of aesthetics and what you're doing to prepare for it, we mentioned this morning we were together, semaglutide is like GLP-1 taking over the world. Everyone's doing it. It's driving patients in. I just heard some really cool data this weekend at OC Octane where like half the patients who come in for semaglutide, they trade up to more and more services. It's driving the most amount of new patients coming into the practice. It is a practice beacon. It's a calling card. It's a banner. And it's intense. It's complex. It's hard to explain. Stripe doesn't like it. They hate weight loss. Like, there are some things about saying weight loss that make it really hard. But how do we capitalize on these trends that come out and make sure that our practice is set up marketing-wise before it becomes big? Like, I think what you mentioned before, if it's already giant and everyone's already done it, we're a little late to the party. So how do we work with, you know, a group like you, somebody who knows what's going on, and kind of get ahead of the curve?
Yeah, no, good point. I think it's, again, work with an industry expert that's at the forefront. You know, people that go to conferences, go to shows, have conversations with the vendors, the providers that are doing all this. And even someone that gets treatment done, right? Mm-hmm. So I get treatment done. I go visit our practices because I like to feel good and look good. So when this whole wellness boom started coming, I'm like, you know what? I should really, my mind was like, I like to look good. Like, that's important, you know, but feeling good is completely different. It's completely different. So if you can combine those two and serve the patient. Now you're giving the patient like the ultimate experience. I look good. I feel good. This is wonderful. I'm not going anywhere. Right. And so to be at the forefront of that before, like, I mean, I hear it every day. We're now wellness, right? It's aesthetic and wellness center, aesthetic and wellness center. I see it all the time. It was med spa. Medispa. Remember Medispa?
It was also mid-level provider. Like we're changing all of our names every day. Yeah. Right here. It was a physician assistant, now a physician associate. So wait a while, the acronym will change.
Yep, it totally will. I don't know what's coming after it, but this industry tends to move very fast. And so my advice would be to just really work with an industry expert that has passion, understanding the space, gets services and treatments done, so they know what it feels like on them. Right. And then someone that's just always at the conferences, the shows, they're in the know, they're curious, and they know how to implement and take action so you don't fall by the wayside. I think that's just super important.
Yeah. Find people who you know are on the forefront and follow them. Like I'll listen to what you're saying. I have a lot of people watch and follow to see what the big things are that are coming. But also, as you find out what those things are, have a system in place to quickly and adequately get up to speed. So to be able to do website changes and social media changes, pay-per-click changes, because if you have to go with this really archaic, old school, I got to go to all my different vendors and do all these different things to get this to work, everyone's taken off and left you. Like you're too late to the party. You've got to be able to work quickly here. And I think that's part of the automation, the managed services kind of going away more in favor of sort of self-service, but with a great, ecosystem around you. You got to work fast.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, you're done.
It's a good working fast. It's actually, I sent an email the other day to my team. I said, guys, we just have to work faster. And they're like, how can we take out more? But that's a great point because, as you see the wellness side taking off, I think it's important to have that partner. And one of the, we still have some managed services at Growth 99. One of the things our customers love is they can just email us and say, hey, look, I now offer wellness. Mm-hmm. And here's all the treatments and services that we have for this. And the team just goes and bakes it out and publishes it super fast so they can just move on to the next thing. I agree. Like working fast is going to be critical, getting all of those outlets out there. And it's just an important to really just be, at the forefront, like you said, and just work fast and getting things done so you can continue to market and grow.
Yeah, I think it's less important to know what you're going to offer in your promotion than it is to actually get it online and get it up and running. We spend so much time here like, what should I put on discount? What should I do on a BOGO? And I'm like, it doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, all that is driving people into the practice. Like, think about your promotions and events as just a lead driver. You just got to get them in. Like, who cares what you're promoting? Well, obviously, make sure that you're not going to lose your butt. I don't mean that. But people spend so much time dwelling on, like, do I give one unit for $8 or one unit for $8.50? I'm like, build a website. Like, why don't you go get it on social media and just do anything? I just think we have to prioritize our business and what we do. You and I do this every single day. We have, more staff and kind of larger things going on that require a lot of attention, and you've got to figure out where you're going to make the most bang for your buck, but also be efficient and productive with it. And I think systems, processes, the things we're talking about today are really, really critical.
It is. I mean, I just look back through history of where I have personally had success in businesses and where I haven't. And the businesses that I implemented, processes and tech, they scaled. The ones that I didn't and I continue to just do things manually, they suffered from growth. And what happens is the customer or the client experiences a bad experience and they move on. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's the biggest takeaway from tech, process, tools. If implemented correctly, it's going to empower the user, which is going to benefit you and them to grow.
Yeah, you kind of get one shot with the first impression. But as we kind of wind down, because I could talk to you forever, but I'm curious, as a business owner who's built and exited things and done it successfully and building, obviously, even more things, from a business owner perspective, forget marketing, forget aesthetic industry, what are some key takeaways as an entrepreneur that you think we should know? Because I get this question also again every single day about, do I spend time on staff and on hiring, or should I be doing onboarding? Should I be doing where do I spend my time? And what are the things that at the end of the day, like the big rocks that actually really matter and aren't just smoke screens?
Oh my gosh. I love that you asked this. Look, being an entrepreneur is very hard. It's not for everybody. I think people think that it is for everybody because you can pull up social and there's this magical world of everybody's doing great. I can't tell you how many times I see like these like private jets or all these fancy bags or fancy shoes, and that's not reality. I think the thought process is, wow, I can do this too. Entrepreneurship's not for everybody. If you want to be lonely, if you want to be scared, if you want to have anxiety, be an entrepreneur.
Yep. Right? It sounds so sexy when you say it like that.
So, and that's just the truth of it, right? And so I really don't think it's for everybody. I think in some cases, like, we may think that way, but really we're better off like working at a practice and being a high income producer for that practice and like leaving all the business stuff to the owner. And I'm not saying, like, to the other side of that, being an entrepreneur is also amazing, rewarding, creates passion, like it creates a movement, right? So, but that also comes with a tremendous amount of pressure. It comes with like, man, you have to be built. Like, you, in my mind, like, you have to be physically fit. You have to always be training your mind. You constantly have to be like going for it, right? And so it's really challenging to be an entrepreneur. It's not easy. And like, when we've scaled and grown in the businesses that I've done, I continuously fire myself from activities. So when you're first starting out, right, you're wearing every hat. You are the, you know, you're the accountant, you're the marketer, you're the salesperson, shoot, you're the injector, you're on the
janitor,
laser.
You're the janitor.
Exactly. You know, but like, fire yourself. As you start to grow, you know, bring down your EBITDA. And what I'm like, bring down your profit to invest, hire people. And maybe they'll only do an 80% of your 100% capacity, right? Like, if you're going to hire someone to do the accounting or whatever, and you're good at the accounting side, and you're like, we're very diligent about crossing the I's and dot the T's, bring in someone, if they're going to do 80%, like, that's okay, right? Train them. The one thing that we've done really well is we've created, as we've hired people, we've created a really cool training portal. So when they come in, like, wherever they're going to be inside the business, they have to go through a training that we have built. It's all recorded. We took the time to like analyze everything to do. And then they have to go through a test, and they pass the test. Like, resume is cool. We obviously go through that. When they get to that point, take them through the training and in shadow. And so I think a lot of times as entrepreneurs, we get stuck thinking we can do everything the best. We can do everything the best. And that's true, because you're the founder, right? It's your baby, mm-hmm. right? But you have to be good at delegation and bringing good talent in as you start to grow. And then as you start to invest in tools and tools, obviously you could advance, like, maybe, you know, like C-level leadership, mid-level management, and just be okay with letting things go so other people can do the work with you.
And you'll never scale if you don't do it. We're big believers here on, you have to have teams and you have to have divisions of labor. And if we're all running in the same directions all the time, we're going to fall over each other. Like, I need you to focus on sales. I'll focus on training. You focus on marketing, whatever it is. I think it's a huge lesson to learn. But also, just because I'm not going to be the best at everything. Because if I'm the best at all the things, but I don't have enough time to do all the things, I'm going to have a diminished productivity or diminished work product. And so our mutual friend, Gretchen Freeling, she always says, I think if you're 70% to the decision, you've waited too long. Like, if you're 70% sure of what you're going to do next, you've waited too long to make the decision. And I think in delegation, that's true as well. If they're 3/4 as good as you are, good enough. Because you can always come in and tweak it at the end. You can polish it off. But for them to, anyone to do the majority of the work and to get it ready for you to kind of sign off on it is a major time saver. And they get better as they go. And eventually they're going to be 90% as good as you are. And eventually they're going to be better than you are at it, which is what you hope. So, yeah, I think you got to pull off the hats. Too many hats,
yeah. I mean, the most attractive business is one that can be ran when you're not there. One that runs better mm-hmm. when you're not there. Right, that's a business, right? If you have to be there every day to run the business, you have an expensive job.
Yeah, I was reading an article about, I can't remember if it's about leadership or management, but the whole point of it was, if your business cannot run with you being gone, you've not built a business. You built like a team, like, it's depending on, there's like this idea that if it requires you to be there for the lights to come on in the morning and for things to happen, you are foolish, if you will, to think that you've built a really strong company, because a PE firm, they're going to come out and knock you out first thing. Like, they're like, yeah, you're out of here. And then if it's all going to crumble, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Your value gets impacted by that. You know, you've exited. All these multipliers and things are all built on automations and systems and processes and things that can run in multiplication without you being there. And it's hard to know that you're replaceable. It's hard to know that you don't matter, Karen, but you don't. You got to find folks who are as good as, you know, better than you are and help you do it.
So true. I mean, I've been through a couple events in my life, and when private equity or VC like looks you up, and they really like pull back the layers and get in and start doing diligence, because maybe they are interested. They want to be in a position to where they can buy the brand and the automation and the revenue and the customers. They don't necessarily want to buy you. Now, sometimes it makes sense for you to stay in, and a lot of times in this world, they want you to stay in for a certain period of time. But they want to know at some point, if you get hit by a bus, like, this thing is going to continue to run. Not that we want anybody to get hit by a bus, but you know, that's the decisions they make. And when you can pass their like quality of earnings checklist, like, you know, you really have something here that's tangible that can, you can exit for a wonderful multiple.
And it goes back to your brand book also. If the practice's name, Dr. Cameron's Botox Bar, and Dr. Cameron's not there anymore, what happens? Like, I think it's even back to how you name your practice, how you market and brand it to the world of, it's not just Cameron, it's all of us doing it. You know, we're like McDonald's fries, we're all great. Pick any of us, we all work. I think so much of it, I mean, PE, as you mentioned in the very beginning, is dictating how we run the businesses now, because eventually if that goal is to be sold, but even if it's not, you got to run your practice the way that a PE firm would want you to compete yes. with them. And if you don't, you're crazy to think that you can compete with them if you don't use the same good, sound practices and principles that they use for running the business. You won't compete long term. They figured it out, right? That's why they have all the money and we don't.
That's right.
That's why they're the ones with the billions of dollars out there and dry powder buying things up. And we're sitting here filming a podcast. No, I'm kidding. But there's a lot of lessons to be learned from PE. If nothing else, they're making us more sophisticated and smarter as an industry, which I think is really, really timely.
Dr. Cameron's Botox Bar.
There you go.
Yeah, don't send anybody there.
We're not sending them your way, don't you? We have all these test names here for our practice. I'm like, I hope no one ever sees this. Like, I'm practicing medicine without a license. I'm really not. It's just a test account.
I love it. No, you made a good point there where, you know, if you still don't ever tend to exit, where, you know, it's a wonderful lifestyle business. I don't think exiting is for everybody. I think doing what you want to do is what you should do, right? If you find your job fun, then continue to do it. But I think run it like how a private equity would acquire it is how it should be ran, because that's the most efficient and effective mm-hmm. way possible.
Yep. And that's marketing. That's everything. Processes, the whole thing. Well, as we wrap up here, any good last words? I know we're going to see you to Sec Next 6. We're going to have you on podium again as usual. We have some fun things coming possibly in May to get you with some more of our people. But what's next for you guys at Growth 29, for you personally? Where do you go from here?
Oh my gosh, we have so much work to do. Like this year, I'm on a mission this year. I mean, I want to, as I've analyzed the industry for so long, there's so much fragmentation, there's antiquated systems out there. Like, I'm on a mission to create something to where we are the platform of choice. If you want to get into aesthetics, or you want to grow to multiple locations or revenue base, we want to be the platform of choice. Right? So anything that has to do with generating new patient leads, putting them into a system and a platform, looking at customer lifetime value, we want to be that decision when it comes to, oh, you're not on Growth 99? We should be on Growth 99, right? And that's what our mission is this year. Like, it's taken us so much work to get to where we are. We've learned a lot. We've failed. We have fallen on our face. We have had success. It's been a journey, but now we're like, okay, we know who we are. And we're on a mission. So that's what's next for us. We're launching new products, new features. We'll obviously announce those. A really cool virtual consultation app that we're bringing. And
I'm super jazzed about that. I just heard the background on that and the deets, and you guys are going to be blown away with the virtual consultation. So
yes,
cool.
A lot of AI there.
Testament to you, right? You're going out, you're finding companies who do cool things that you think should be part of your world and your ecosystem. And just like a practice has to do the same thing, right? You're out aggressively trying to find ways to make your business better.
Yeah, exactly. And then that's what, you know, we're going to go to a lot of shows this year, create more content, good podcasts. Like, we just want to make sure like our customers are super happy. And it's hard to do that. You know, it's hard to do that. So that's our mission. Like, really get better talent at our company. We want to get the best talent. We want to have the best platform, and we want to give the best product and service possible. You know, and it's not easy to do. It takes time, but that's our mission this year.
Well, if you guys aren't already subscribed, Medical Millionaire is a podcast on really all the platforms. It's Cameron, sometimes alone, giving great advice and nuggets, sometimes with guests. But I listen to it all the time. I get all kinds of great details and things from there. And I think it's helpful to hear an industry expert talk about things that are real and timely, because you do it just like we do. It's in real time all the time. So it's not like some old, stodgy content that's you know, worn out. But your website, your blogs that you guys put out, everything is always really relevant. So if you guys aren't following Cameron, definitely do it. Your Growth 99 Instagram, give us your handle.
It's growth99_insta. I wish we got away from the Insta, but we can't. So it's growth99_insta. The best way to contact us, though, is just go to growth99.com, and you can connect to any of our channels through that way.
Yeah, and you got tons of content on your site as well. Really, really interesting site. Good best practices, too. So go check them out for sure. And we definitely integrate with Growth99. We have some cool things that we share back and forth if you're an AR customer. So we would love to tell you about that. Send us a chat as well. We'll be glad to fix you up. But thanks for coming on today and ending us. We're almost done with season 4. It's been a great season. And having this as one of our last episodes has been a treat to have you in the office here with us on camera. So
thank you so much for having me. I love it. Appreciate it.
Well, I'll see all the rest of you guys next week for episode 79. Bye, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to another episode of For the Record. This podcast is not intended to provide legal or medical advice. It's for entertainment, education, and information purposes only. For more information on this week's guest or to get started with Aesthetic Record, email us at info@aestheticrecord.com. Be sure to tune in next week for more fresh perspectives on disrupting the status quo and surviving in the aesthetics industry.